work
Walmart.
month.
We're kind of subsidizing Walmart then.
Well, we have been, you know, this has been a thing that's been going on with them for a very long time. It's they're not the only ones, but this is one of those, you know, the flaws in the capitalist system that bother people that pay attention but are glossed over by people that don't and hidden by people that profit from this. The you've talked before about the Walmart family, you know, people that have never worked a day in their lives taking home literally billions of dollars over the course of a few years, and it's all off everybody else's back. You know, if you shop at Walmart, you're paying these people to be parasites. And the promotion, and Walmart's not the only company. I'm not trying to pick on them, but they're a local example because they're everywhere and they kill local businesses. That's not the focus of your program here, so I'm going to let that go. But coping with the COVID situation, there's a very good article I saw online that was reprinted from the Atlantic magazine, and it said you're going to get COVID-19, and it's a really nice overview. I guess nice might not be the right word, but it's a nice overview of the history here, you know, the unfolding story, the various regions and how they've dealt with this, the governmental response or non-response, which keeps changing and not for the better, largely. So that's a really good information source for people. It gives you some of the symptoms, it gives you some of the toxicology, for want of a better word, in terms of how it transmits and what they're finding out. And it's, you know, information is power. We're all in it, in this together. You know, it affects more of us, some of us much more than others. But if you know something about it, you will know a little bit more how to act, a little bit more how to help, and a little bit more, you know, what's unfolding. We need to agitate with our politicians and not just sit here going, oh, woe is me, because this is one of those other crisis capitalism paydays coming up unless we intervene and try and suck some of that money off the top and put it down to where people that are leading real lives benefit from it. And not
are you stuck at home? Are you stuck at home like everybody else?
My job is fairly simple, and I work outdoors, so I'm still going to work. I'm semi-retired, but you know, I can go and I interact with, you know, a few people in my job site, and perhaps 5 or 10 of the public come in the course of a day. So, you know, we're not at high risk, and I believe the fresh air is actually doing me some good. But I am fortunate to, you know, have at least my basics covered by Social Security. And I'm able to get by. You know, my wife is able to cook from scratch, and we have a pantry, and, you know, we try and pay attention. And you know, some of these things you can pool with your neighbors. If you know, if you're the person that went out and bought, you know, 60 pounds of rice or, you know, 500 pounds of beans or whatever, you know, you can break that up and leave some at your neighbors or your friends' houses for them to use. You know, you can spread the wealth around. The panic buying is just that, and it's a disadvantage to everybody. You know, yeah, you want to cover your bases, but you don't need to bunker up for another 10 years of this.
So, well, I'm thinking, you know, if Lori Garrett is right in saying that there's going to be a full lockdown coming that may last for a year, it makes sense then to figure, well, if I'm going to be stuck in the house for a year, how much toilet paper I'm going to need, you know? How much soap will I need? How much should
okay.
I, you know, different
Pear,
things,
Pear,
you know?
This is not helpful to broadcast as an attitude. The working attitude here is, even in San Francisco, where they're under essentially martial law, apparently, you are allowed to go out of your house for medical reasons, and you're allowed to go out of your house to shop. So you don't need to have, you know, 400 days of supplies. You don't need to, you know, strap on three pistols and buy a bucket load of ammunition, because that's not going to get you through this. What's going to get you through this, I think, is helping yourself and helping your neighbors get by and get through. And cooperation is the byword here. No, you don't want to go and hang out with people necessarily unless they're also being isolated. You know, if you're self-isolating, the viruses, as I understand it, are not viable after about 8 hours at room temperature. So you're not going to catch it walking around your apartment building to people who are not circulating. You know, if they're staying at home too, you know, you and your neighbors, and my understanding, and people should do their own research, but you and your neighbors down the road here can have a potluck dinner. You can do things together. You can play cards. You can do that kind of stuff. You don't have to nail your door shut to get through this. But you're going to have to be smart. You're going to have to do, you know, some of the basic germ-killing stuff that you should be doing already. You know, wipe off the doorknobs and wipe off the telephone and, you know, you know what, people know what they should do.
Oh, one important thing, let me interject here, because I just read this today, that when you do use these, you know, sanitary wipes, do not flush them down the toilet. And the reason why is that unlike paper, these sanitary wipes, they do not disintegrate. They stay you know, a little square of fiber or whatever it is, and they really clog up the works. So do not flush the wipes. Put them in the trash.
That's good. That's a great idea and great information. The other part of this is, if you get to the point where you're using those for your toilet, alas, then you have to get yourself a container that's going to be germ resistant, you know, a plastic bag or something disposable, or a trash can with a flop lid, so you can put a bag in it and take care of those in regular trash, because you're otherwise going to have a lot of problems, and you're going to make a lot of problems because the sewage system can't handle that.
Well, there's some countries where they burn it.
Well, you know, just you got to decide what's going to work for you, but don't compound the problem by being egocentric. Well, it's okay for me. I don't care what happens to everybody else. Guess what, people? We can't afford to do that now.
Yeah.
We can't live that way, because otherwise we're not going to live. This is a big deal. This is potentially a long-lasting deal. We might get lucky. We might get ahead of this. They might figure out a vaccine, but none of that's going to happen tomorrow. But if you hunker down and get a survivalist mentality going in the most extreme way, you're not going to come out of this as a better person. You're not going to come out of this into a better society. If we're driving people to desperation, then we're all going to get there at the same time. So I'm going to let you go. I appreciate your work. Good day and good luck.
Well, thanks for the call. Good luck to you wherever you are, and you know, stay sane and stay in touch.
Thanks.
Okay, back to Wells.
Per, you got Ross on the line next.
Okay, we have Ross on the line. Good morning, Ross.
Wonderful to hear you again this week, Per. We're discussing all this this business with Corona. I like the name, The Crown, but it's slowly into the news. There's a report of some of the beneficial side effects of this otherwise catastrophe. They notice that the water is clear in the bays around the world, and the dolphins are swimming up to the cargo ships and saying hello again, and mm-hmm. and the air is clear. And if you step outside right now, in fact, I'm going to step outside right now, I do not see a single plane trail over Portland. And so I wanted to say that we need to complete our intersectionality of interest and recognizing that this is a wonderful miracle, an economic and ecological miracle for life on the planet. It's going to be a long pause in the extinction of life, and it's wonderful. For the last 20 years, I've been in this state of dismay over the economy, and I wonder how it could be stopped. And I used to think, well, we could have a movement to stop consumption, and maybe the economy would collapse, and that would be good for the world. But no,
a little microbe is doing it.
Pardon me?
Yeah, a little microbe is doing it. Well, I think air travel is kind of a dead end anyway, because of even if we switch to renewable energy, which is mainly in the form of electricity, so far they have not been able to fly any commercial plane on electricity. They use kerosene, and you know, that is getting more and more scarce, and so air travel is just kind of a dead end.
Well, I think it's a dead end, and don't we wish we could make automobile travel a dead end too? Because no matter what we do with electric cars, the world built around everybody going around in a ton of hardware to get from A to B, it just does not make sense. Never has.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really interested in this. I think we have a policy now in the United States, somewhat different than the policy that the Chinese tried to have, but has sort of failed. But and that is, do you want to capture and eradicate this this virus, or do you want to just live with it? And in our case, we're going to so-called flatten the curve. It means, as some people were suggesting, everybody's going to get it. We just want to slow down so our hospitals work. And
my understanding is that you know, as it spreads, more and more people, you know, our bodies will kind of get used to this virus. It'll become just another virus that you know, appears every year, and we deal with it with vaccines and whatever. And the reason is having such a devastating effect now is because it is, like they say, it's a novel virus. It's totally new. Our bodies have never seen it before. And they're just trying to figure out, our bodies are trying to learn how to cope with this virus.
Right, and we have zero so-called herd immunity. And eventually, you're right, we will get herd immunity in the long run. We'd also get in the short run, but if we get it in the short run, it'd be through the course of a larger personal disaster to many people. But I do think I have a couple crazy ideas. One idea is that as it was done years ago, when before we had smallpox vaccination, using the cowpox whatever that microorganism, people used to inoculate themselves or their children early in the hopes of having a mild experience with the smallpox and then gain immunity. Mm-hmm. Well, in the same case, it seems to me that especially healthcare workers and people who are high at risk of catching this disease in the short run, this would be a good time that they could go take a inoculation vacation and in some nice place and supported by the best of medical equipment, and could maybe become research subjects to learn more about the disease, and then come back after a month and go back to work as people with immunity. And it's a crazy idea, but I can't think of any major critique. But anyway, I sure appreciate your program and your thinking on these things. But I like the idea of this this economic miracle that's smashing this this suicide machine that we call our society. And we need to see this as a great opportunity to rebuild it, just like there's the short discussion earlier on. I think it was on Democracy Now, talking about that we have to use the ideas that we find lying around in this crisis time and make it an opportunity to build a new society.
Mm-hmm.
So with that hopeful thought, I guess I'll leave you. Except
okay,
with one idea. This is the first day of spring, and I would encourage people to hold their meetings, but hold their meetings in a park or empty lot, and stand 6 feet away, or put your blanket 6 feet around. But this mm-hmm. time, continue your meetings. Let's get outside mm-hmm. and meet.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call.
You bet. Take care. Bless you.
I think we're heading for a new society, whether we're ready or not. You know, it's going to happen. So it's coming, and it's a matter of learning how to deal with it rather than having it just kind of thrust upon us without being prepared, without even thinking about it. You know, the more we think about it, kind of plan our responses, the better off we'll be. Anyway... if people want to call in, how are you doing out there in remote land? We are all kind of locked down. We're kind of we're in our houses, but we can communicate via cable, via the phone, kind of like in Italy where people stand on their balconies and they sing to each other. So that might be something cable can do. We could have people phone in, and we could all get all the phones going at once and sing a chorus of some sort or other. Brave new world we're in. There's one interesting thing. I suppose one thing that really surprises me when I think about it is, you know, with all of the bad effects of this coronavirus, I haven't seen any. Maybe somebody has seen it. Nobody's thought to blame Russia. Nobody's thought to blame Putin for unleashing this upon us, you know. You think that would be a sort of almost like a standard response these days. Something bad happens. Aha, Putin did it. But one thing I've noticed in some of these news stories or stories that analyze the news stories, one of the themes that's been with us now for a while is that that Russia is not only hacking our networks, but they are kind of putting their news stories, they're putting stories onto the social media, and with the aim of kind of destroying democracy. One phrase you hear a lot is sowing discord. And what these stories do, not the Russian stories that are emanating from Russia, but our response to it is that we are looking at these stories not so much what they say, but what they intend to do, or what we assume to be their purpose. So when we say that this story, wherever it comes from, is aimed at sowing discord, Well, that is our response to it. That is our take on how on what we are ascribing motives to whoever is pushing this story, which is not the same thing as describing what this story says. So the story may very well be true, but we are sort of looking at it from the point of view of what it supposedly intends to achieve, namely sowing discord. And to me, this is kind of, well, it's an interesting speculation, but it kind of misses the point. And one perfect example is going back to the sort of the original, one of the original Russia meddling stories was where they supposedly hacked the emails of the Democratic National Committee. And that has been discredited by a man named William Binney, who used to be the technical director for the NSA. And he said that the DNC stories could not have been hacked, and he says the reason is that there was not enough time for hacking to be done. Now, these stories have a kind of a time signature on them, and you can also see where they originate from. But according to William Binney, there was not enough time to hack these stories. They had to have been leaked from within the DNC, kind of downloaded into maybe a thumb drive or something, and then passed out to the media. But the stories themselves revolve. One of the stories was gave the content. You know, Hillary Clinton was making a lot of very well-paid speeches to Wall Street insiders. And some of the stories had they revealed what she told these Wall Street guys. And one of the other stories had to do with efforts by the Democratic National Committee to disfavor Bernie Sanders' campaign. This is back in 2016. And as far as I know, all these stories were true. They were not lies. They were not fake news. They were true stories, but they were supposedly promulgated with the intent to, as we say, sow discord. And so we've sort of gotten away from truth or falsity. In my opinion, these stories were true stories and things that people had a right to know about. And so there's no reason to cover them up in the first place. Whoever revealed them, however it was done, was doing the American public a big favor by showing us some of the truth about what is going on in the upper reaches of our political system. And so this kind of thinking is continued, where more stories that reveal some of the unseemly goings-on in our political system, they are looked at as for their purpose and not for their content. And to me, this is, it's interesting to speculate about their purpose, but it's we should keep in mind that that there is a matter of what is true, what is false. Do we want to know about this stuff? Is it worth knowing about this stuff?
Hey, Pear, you have a caller on the line. You have Dale on the line for you.
Okay, we have Dale on the line. Good morning, Dale.
Hey, good morning, Pear. I was glad to see you bring up this topic. You may have heard that the Cambridge Analytica people that were supposedly indicted brought a lawyer and wanted it to go to trial, and a couple of members of the prosecuting team declined to do it.
Yeah, I just read about that. I guess what happened is that this sort of comes out of the Mueller report.
And
some of these Russian people were indicted. Now, they're in Russia. There's no question that they're going to come to Washington and stand trial. So it's like, yeah, you can indict them, and that's sort of the end of it. But apparently it was not the end of it. They hired some lawyer to do discovery, to uncover the facts. So can you tell us more about that?
I think you probably covered as well as I could, but I just find it kind of interesting. I remember trying to call Joe Uris and asking for some evidence of this Russiagate thing that he's been promoting so heavily over the years, and he called me a paranoid delusional, hung up on me.
Really? Well, okay. I don't... Yeah, it's...
You know, one other issue that I just saw this morning is that Tulsi Gabbard has suspended her campaign.
Yeah, that's too bad. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And but the really sad part of it is that she's endorsing Biden.
Oh, really?
And Biden, you know, could be correctly described as the absolute opposite of everything she stands for.
Yeah, that could be. You know, Biden was kind of the point man on our little venture into Ukraine. And
yeah.
That's what worries me.
Well, and of course, that Ukraine thing was just a huge basket of corruption, you know. And mm-hmm. Hunter Biden is simply Joe Biden's bag man.
Well, whatever, you know, this deserves, you know, Trump has been criticized for trying to, I don't know, play a political game with the Hunter Biden affair, but leaving Trump out of it, it seems to me there's something worth knowing about what is going on here. On the face of it, it looks kind of unseemly, kind of a little crooked to have Hunter Biden getting, I think, $50,000 every month for sitting on this board of this Ukrainian gas company. And so this is something that we deserve to know more about. However it's done, whoever cares to investigate it.
You know, there have been some reports, and I, you know, I can't say that I know them to be authentic, but apparently there's some documentation of money transfers that shows that some organization put together by Hunter Biden and the son of... I'm having a Biden moment here. Anyway, they had some kind of an organization and gotten billions of dollars out of the Ukraine for purposes unknown.
I heard something about that. Was it the son of some associate of John Kerry?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah, I really don't know the details, but here's something else that certainly. Something we ought to be learning more about, you know.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. You know, I think, and I think the points that you made regarding the content of Hillary's emails, you know, nobody seemed to pay any attention to that. You know, it was all these evil Russians for for showing them to us.
Well, I think they did us. a favor, if what I hear about the. Her speeches are true. This is something we should be learning about. Here she is, a candidate for president, and she's telling these Wall Street big shots the kind of stuff they want what they can get out of a future presidency. So
yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head. Well, I'll let you go, but I really appreciate your program.
Well, anyway, thanks for the call. I think we're getting near the end of our hour. This has been Fight the Empire. I've been doing a whole hour. Teresa Mitchell will be back next week. And so this is your radio station, folks. We may be isolated in our homes. Not getting out the way we used to, and hopefully when this virus thing kind of dissipates, that Once more, we will be down there at that little building on Southeast 8th Street making good radio for our community. So thank you for listening.
Hey, Paris, this is Jen. I just want to say you made good radio today, even if it was by phone. We really appreciate you calling in and taking calls and giving a voice to the community today.
Well, it's been kind of fun. I think I'd like to do it from home more often.
Oh, no. Programmers never come in again. They're like, this is nice. I can do my show in my pajamas.
Hey, that's right.
Well, that would make me sad because I miss you, Pear.
Well, yeah, it's kind of, I miss being down there, too. But anyway, so thank you very much for setting all this up.
And, no problem.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, be well, Pear.
Yep.
Have a good day. And you are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is almost 10 o'clock. We got a few seconds left there on the clock. Coming up next is your usual program of Flashpoints, which, like many shows, like the ones you're hearing here on KBOO, hey, let's put up some music. How about that? Is being produced remotely. That's right. Dennis Bernstein is one of the many people who is producing their shows from home out there with KPFA. So we really appreciate them taking the time to still produce their shows too, because we know how important Flashpoints is to so many of our listeners. So we want to thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio. We hope you're doing well. If you're isolated inside or quarantining yourself inside right now, we thank you for tuning in. We hope that it kind of feels like a little bit of a community as you're tuning in and saying, oh, those are some voices I know. I'm used to not seeing their faces. Hey, this is normal because it's radio. It's a weird world we live in right now. Kind of a scary world. So I know that I am very, very grateful for people like Pear for calling in, for our local show, Flashpoints, still being produced. Such important voices to be hearing from. So we will be hearing from Dennis Bernstein and Flashpoints in just a little bit. But first, this from KBOO.